second. Got phone call coming in. I'll be right back with you. TZ for him.
Hey, David. Good morning. N4DJC.
What's it this morning?
Looks like you went out earlier today in the monsoon and going out to get a little something to eat this morning and got drenched from the knees down just about, so I had to change some clothes and run a few errands back home now, though. Hopefully it's going to clear up after two or three today, I hope.
You're out just dodging raindrops.
That's enough to dodge them. I think I ran into them. It's not too bad here in Anderson, but this morning it was just pouring for a while. And of course, I picked that particular time, to go out to grab us something for breakfast this morning, which would have been fine if I hadn't got soaked, but it was kind of miserable sitting there eating with my jeans wet from about midway from my knees down, and I was too much in a hurry to wait it out for a few minutes, and it would have tapered off by then, I'm sure.
Mom, I had headed up to Traverse Rest, and I'm headed back now, I'm going south on Highway 25 bypass, and looking at the clouds, it's a lot lighter looking south, and it looks like the heavier clouds are over toward, I guess, deep mine north, or anyway. So the rain's like getting a little lighter now. It was pouring down up there in Traverse Rest.
I hope it's going to ease up this afternoon. My wife is going to a play with my daughter at the Peace Center tonight. I can't remember which one it is. They go several times a year. So she was headed up there this afternoon about 5, and hopefully it'll be good for a drive up there and good when they get out of the plane and come back. But I don't like 85 at night when it's pouring down rain. I just don't see that well anymore.
As well as I used to, and I used to enjoy driving at night, but not as much, and especially when it's raining. I drove down to Atlanta for one of my cousin's funerals. It's been a few months back now, and it poured the whole way down there. I mean, just torrential rain, and I tell you, his name was Hal, and I said, Hal, I wouldn't do this for just anybody. It was awful.
Didn't get any better either. It just gets worse and worse. I think my wife took her mother to Emory for her cancer treatments for a few years, and it was going down to Emory downtown to the Winship Center. It's just like a baseball bat and wrap yourself across the head. It's just horrible. We were down there a couple of months ago too. I guess it was around Christmas time for a little get together with her sister there. She lives in Duluth, and traffic wasn't bad then. I was really surprised we came back that evening. It was like I think it was a Saturday before Christmas, maybe. I don't remember for sure, but I think it was that weekend. I thought the traffic would be horrible, but it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be, and didn't rain hardly at all on us.
85 is bad enough when it's dry. Heck, I can remember when they built 85.
My uncle, back in the late 60s, I guess, they lived on Perimeter Road, and it was just a two-lane highway in those days. And, of course, when they were building it, we used to drive. I'm originally from Harville, and we drive from Harville I think we wouldn't get to, we would hit the four lane. I can't remember where it was now. It was someplace had a, somebody had, they had like a, seemed like they made, had a soup factory or something there that can't remember the name of the little town. Now we'd go through there and it'd hit a four lane at that point and go to Atlanta. And of course when they built 85, it was just, you know, it was fine for a while, but you know, if you build a road, they'll fill it up eventually.
They said that 85 reached its capacity as a four lane when they built it originally, 10 years before they, predicted it would.
When they were pouring all the concrete for it, the original ones, they poured the concrete, I think, was about 8 inches thick, and they thought it'd last, you know, 100 years or some ridiculous amount of time like that. And, but those trucks, man, they just take a, they really take a toll on highways, and traffic just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And as you said, by the time they got finished with, you know, one lane, they might as well go in and put six in. And I think the, it's kind of like the connector there. Eventually, it's going to get filled up, too. I mean, I guess at some point in time, people are trying to avoid that Woodruff Road area.
Let's see. They are building kind of a bypass for local people to use on Woodruff Road. I think it's south of 385. And so that'll be helpful, at least at that point. But that interchange at 385 and 85 is fine. I think it's finally finished, and they might have a little buttoning up to do. But now they're talking about, you know, who they're going to name it after and that kind of thing. But it's something else. I'd like to see an aerial view of it.
Get my daughter. My daughter is a senior producer at WYFF. I have to get her to get somebody up the chopper to get some photos of it or get some film of it. But I've seen a couple of them, and it looks pretty interesting. It doesn't look like Spaghetti Junction, but it's not, you know, it's not far from it. I remember I met the guy that designed Spaghetti Junction. And, you know, that Georgia interchange over there, and he worked on that thing for years, and he said, I got stuck on top of it many a time. I said, every time I get stuck on top of it, I think about you.
Yeah, I tell you, I used to have to go down there when I worked for the Mazda dealership here in town, and we had to go down to Atlanta for training, and had to go through all that Spaghetti Junction, and we get on 285 and then get on 75, and the school and the hotel were right across the street from each other, and can't remember the exit, but it wasn't too far down 75 or up 75, and but it was an interesting drive at night. Sometimes I'd miss the exit and have to double back.
That 75, where 285 runs into 75, that's kind of a crazy exit there, because there are couple of places you can make a, you know, you just get off on the wrong lane and you're stuck for a while. It's kind of like getting on Georgia 400. You got to get on it and get off it before you have to pay the toll. But you're talking about the little bypass there for Woodruff. I noticed my daughter lives in Malden, and I noticed there when we went up Verde, early, it must have been last week sometime, we went up Verde, and that second, let's see, first, second, it's either the second or third roundabout, they had a had a little deal off there, which said would have rode that direction. Hadn't gathered up the nerve to go that way to see where it comes out at. But I did notice that the last time we went over Dave.
It was a nice addition. And I think, I mean, it runs. Let's see. It becomes Roper Mountain, and it runs all the way to Lawrence Road, and then I think it changes names when it crosses Lawrence Road. It goes into a real nice subdivision there. It's been there a long time. And I can't remember the name of the road. But anyway. But I tell you, Verde has really changed. They're just building over there like crazy.
Subdivision is our grandkids go to Sarah Collins Elementary back over, and we cut through that way sometimes when we pick them up at school. And I call that the Downton Abbey neighborhood. There's a couple of houses over there like something out of Biltmore Estate, but I guess right beside the Toyota dealership there. But I think Verde is after they finish that bridge, if that thing just it's just like they unleashed. At least the masses, because now that place is just packed going through there. But I do like to, we got a couple of roundabouts here just off the road that I live on, and I like them pretty well, but the hours are real small. They're not double lane, and they're a little bit on the small side, and we still haven't got people accustomed to yielding to somebody that's already in the traffic circle.
They don't understand traffic circles, and they don't realize who has the right of way, and you have to kind of keep your eyeballs open, paying attention, because they might just keep on coming. Like I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do here, but here I come anyway. That kind of thing.
I try to use turn signals, but I told my wife the other day, I said, I think a turn signal, all a turn signal does is confuse them. Because if I put a turn signal on, they'll sit there and hold and hold and hold, and they don't know. I was like, this person down here just off Brown Road, on Brown Road at King's, it's real small. People have been running over the trucks come through, they just run right over the median. They don't even slow, and sometimes they don't even slow down.
Yeah, they put them in at Verde, and they're two-lane traffic circles out. I'm not sure I've ever run into that before, and that can really get confusing. But I do use my turn signal when I'm exiting the circle. In fact, I got pulled over for not using my turn signal, which is one of my pet peeves. I pushed the lever up, but I must have not pushed it up high enough to get it to activate. And I have to confess, I was exceeding the speed limit. And a nice officer, he says, I'm going to drop the speeding and just charge you for the illegal lane change. And I said, well, how much is that going to be? He said, $185.
But they don't tell you about the other part of it sometimes. It's really going to cost you more than that. I won't tell the story now because it's a little bit of a long story, but I got pulled over. First time I got pulled over in 30 years, I guess, my tag was out. And then my insurance card was out too, and it was a long story, but it's kind of a mess up on the DMV's part. I finally got straightened out, and he dropped both the tickets. Thank goodness it saved me. But it's gonna be about $500, I think. And I didn't. I went to court anyway. But he said you didn't have to go. I was gonna take care of it. I said, yeah, I wanted to be sure. I didn't want him to come with some bench warrant after me.
Or CPA. Haven't heard the repeater, but I'm sure it's more than 10 minutes. Well, my wife told me she had some unpaid parking tickets when we lived in Charleston, and I said, well, she said, I'm just not going to pay them. That's not right. She worked downtown, and I said, well, what does that mean? And if you don't pay them, I mean, she said, well, the car's in your name, so they probably got a bench worn out for you, so don't get pulled over.
I know you probably saw this on TV or somewhere, but you know they had somebody was selling a parking spot. They were, I guess it's on Broad in Charleston. We have family down there. We don't get as often as we did, but my wife goes down about once a year or so to see her aunt, but they had just a parking space on Broad, and somebody said, well, that'd be pretty nice. You know, they saw $100,000 me a bid. I said, that's not bad for some of our, that's just a parking space. That doesn't include anything else. That is just a parking space. And I think it went for $106,000, something like that.
Well, she had, she worked for some attorneys down there, and our last name is Cole, and so it was Wise and Cole was the law firm, and Dewey Wise had asked her to stay over one night, and she parked in a garage across the street. Well, it was going to be dark when she was going to be finished with the project that he gave her, and so she went and got her car, and the sign there said you had to turn right, you couldn't go straight across. Well, it's a little dinky intersection. She went straight across. Well, when she pulled in the parking lot and parked, the policeman was behind her with the blue lights on. But when she told her, when she told him what, you know, what she was doing, she said, well, you tell Dewey Wise to have somebody escort you to your car next time.
They love those lawyers anyway.
He was, I guess, you know, my wife, her dad was captain for the city of Greenville for 33 years, so he was captain of detectives for 24 years, so maybe he saw a little law enforcement influence in her.
I have a good friend of mine that was a sergeant, just a police sergeant, a traffic sergeant for years, and he said this has been back in the 70s, I guess. And he said the two things, he said, you get these young guys, he said, you give them a gun, and back in those days, they were running these Dodge Chargers. You give them a Dodge Charger and a gun, he said, and a badge, he said, you just have to keep your eye on them, all the young ones all the time, make sure they're out pulling people over. And he was, I was getting my hair cut, it's been several years ago, and he was still working at that time, and they actually pulled this guy over in the parking lot where I was getting my hair cut, and this young guy got out, was going to write this guy. He came inside, and I said, what's going on? He said, well, he was trying to give me a ticket. He was in like a 61 or 62 something, an old truck. It didn't have any seatbelts in it, and he was going to write him a ticket for not having seatbelts, and the traffic sergeant, he pulled up, and he just kind of shoots the guy away. He came inside. I said, well, Vic, I said, did you learn anything? He said, well, he'd never seen a car with that seatbelt before.
That's funny. Yeah, I think all they had was a lap belt for the driver, and that was it. You didn't even have a shoulder belt or anything, and nothing for everybody else. Everybody else, you were just on your own. Tommy Abbott, he used to be part owner of John Finger Mazda. He borrowed the parts truck one evening, had his as young boys in there, and it had manual windows, and they said, "Daddy, what are these?" And he said, "Well, that's how you roll the windows down." So, you know, guess what? For the whole trip home, these guys were fascinated, and they were just rolling the windows up and down, up and down, up and down, because they'd never seen anything like that. They'd always, you know, pushed a button for the windows.
Buddy, too, I hadn't thought about that, but that's true. I guess I haven't seen anything that roll up windows in, gosh, years, probably 30 years, I guess. Never saw one. Like I said, I don't remember this guy. I think this truck might have had a lap belt, but anyway, it didn't have a shoulder belt. And the whole thing was kind of comical. And the guy didn't get me, the guy that was, came in the shop, he didn't get mad about it. He just thought it was funny to say. I said, "Well, you know what?" I said, "I think the seat belt is probably, I think it's about an $85 or $90 ticket now, and plus the way the city of Anderson does, they do city and county, so they add another, whatever the original fine is, it's almost double what the actual, you know, sometimes when they tell you a fine, it's almost double what it is by the time they add all the other stuff into it." I said, "Well, that probably saved you $150. So it's worth it.
I tell you, seat belts and ABS brakes and airbags, been some of the best things that they've come out with. And a lot of people don't know, your seatbelt, if, I can't remember the year they started this, but I'm going to say it was around early 2000s. You actually have an explosive charge under your seat. And what it does is it's attached to the cable where your seatbelt is locked, and it pulls that seatbelt, that part of the belt tight that goes around your waist. And then, of course, the shoulder part is in a ratcheting system that locks and... And all this happens in about a millisecond, and if you're going over a certain speed, your airbags deploy if it's a frontal collision or a side collision if you have side airbags. And it's amazing. And then ABS brakes, people, we were taught that they would not prevent an accident, but they actually will, because you can steer the car while you're got the brakes slammed on in a panic stop because the tires are still rolling. They're not skidding. And my wife actually proved that because a truck stopped in front of her and she looked beside her and the lane was empty. So she just jerked the car over into the empty lane and prevented running in the back of him.
DKC for ID. Yeah, I worked for the infamous Takata company, but I wasn't involved in any of the, we just manufactured the airbags. We didn't have anything to do with the propellant. That was up in Michigan, but we had wove airbags for just about every major manufacturer, and had a coating operation too. We coated it, but I saw the crash test sites, and we talked. We did stuff in NASA and a lot of other people too. We actually had they had a relationship with Morton Thiokol, which I know. That's the company that did the solid rocket boosters when the Challenger disaster occurred, and they were basically using the same thing, a similar propellant to that. When I heard that, I said, "This can't be so good. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it." And they were using this propellant, and of course, what happens to it is it gets wet. Instead of being a powder, it turns into a solid. Then when it turns into a solid, that's where the explosive. Instead of being a control controlled explosions all at one time. That's where they ran into the problems with it. Of course, I think they're filing for bankruptcy now, but I worked on it. It's probably been about 25 years ago, I guess, or more.
That was a horrible accident. Over O-rings. It's amazing that an O-ring could bring down something like that. All right, well, I have arrived at the pharmacy here, so I'm going to jump out and get some drugs. Prescription drugs, that is. So I'll be back in here in a minute. If I don't talk to you again, have a good day. Have a good rest of the day, KB4CBA.
Have a good afternoon, Dave. Hope whatever you're getting makes you feel better, whatever it is. I hate paying for a minor genetic and not too expensive, but it can be a real problem for a lot of people who don't have insurance. Anyway, have a good afternoon, and I may catch you on a little bit later. I'm going to run downstairs here for a few minutes, but good talking to you. KP4CBA, N4DJC.